The word borderlands describes an area of uncertainty between two separate countries. The aim of this programme is to examine whether, as a result of the events that are unfolding north of the border, will the northeastern Cumbria soon be defined as a new borderlands? Over the next 20 minutes or so, we'll hear from people from across the region.
I think the northeast and particularly the west of Scotland are very, very similar places. When I came to Middlesbrough 14 years ago, where I realised it was just like the Glasgow that I grew up in.
My view is there's a borderland here now in Cumbria. We need to be ready to engage with that debate.
We'll hear from those who believe an independent Scotland would benefit the northeast and Cumbria.
Scotland's liberation will be the liberation of the north of England. I have no doubts about that whatsoever.
Having the ability to travel from Newcastle to Glasgow in, say, 45 minutes, that would just transform how we consider the two cities.
And we'll hear from both sides of the debate about whether the northeast and Cumbria should now seek its own form of independence.
I believe there's still a powerful case for regional government. We're out of step with the rest of the world.
I still don't think this is an issue which is being talked about in the streets and on the doorsteps. It's too soon still to present that question again.
This is not a programme that will examine whether Scotland will vote yes or no in September. Instead, we'll be looking again at what the northeastern Cumbria shares with Scotland, what an independent Scotland might be able to offer us, and whether, in fact, we now need to take control of our own destiny. We start on the banks of the River Tees. In the 12th century, this was, in fact, the border between England and Scotland. Today, it's the home of Middlesbrough Football Club and the Riverside Stadium.
8 minutes in, and Middlesbrough 0, Villarreal 0. Listening to BBC Tees Sport on this Saturday afternoon at the Riverside, 95 FM, DAB Digital Radio.
Football is very much in the DNA of the northeastern Cumbria. Fans of Carlisle United, Sunderland and Newcastle United are just as passionate about their teams as football fans north of the border. And the Borough fans have their own views on our Scottish neighbours.
Scotland, if I said the word Scotland to you, what's the first thing you think of?
Aberdeen.
Are you from Aberdeen?
Yeah.
How long have you been down on Teesside?
47 years.
Scotland, I think of kilt and haggis.
Any similarities between Teesside and Scotland?
The spirit. The spirit, what did he say?
The weather.
The weather, yeah. The spirit, maybe.
I'll be pretty honest, I think Teesside is a lot more relaxed than Scotland. Scotland have got a thing at the moment. They've got chips on the shoulder. It's a them and us at the moment. I don't know what's wrong with them.
The Yes campaign throughout this debate has put a huge emphasis on the idea that Scotland is governed by a Conservative Party it didn't vote for and a Parliament that doesn't represent the Scottish people.
For half the time since the end of the Second World War, we have been saddled with governments we did not vote for. Even when Scotland votes Labour, there is no guarantee that we end up with a Labour government. And all too often, even when there is a UK Labour government, it's the priorities of Westminster, not of Scotland, which prevail.
And you'd find many in the northeastern Cumbria who'd agree with those kind of sentiments. Here at the North Ormsby Community Hub, which is almost in sight of the Riverside Stadium, they're holding a family fun day for some of the poorest families in the country.
With Ormsby, it has its problems like everywhere else. There's families living in really bad housing and there's problems of poverty.
Cheryl has two children and works hard to try and improve her local community. But unemployment is high and the social and economic divides in this community are growing.
Just up the road is a place called Ormsby Bank. It would take you 10 minutes to walk there. And life expectancy on Ormsby Bank, they're expected to live 10 years longer than we do. And we're only over the road. 10 minutes up the road, they've got 10 years longer than what we do living here.
I'm going to show you a picture. What's that?
I know what it is, but I don't think much of it.
That's the Houses of Parliament in London.
Yes.
What do you think of the people that inhabit that place?
They don't live in the real world, do they? No, they haven't got a clue. It's kind of out of sight, out of mind.
Is that how the North East feels?
Majority of people do, yeah.
And that feeling of remoteness from Westminster is something that Professor Keith Shaw from Northumbria University says the North East and Cumbria shares with Scotland.
The First Minister, Alex Salmond, Nicola Sturgeon, the Deputy First Minister, have called the North East and probably Cumbria our close friends across the border. So clearly what they're capturing is a set of identities, but certainly we share a shared political vision, and certainly we have a number of common problems that we can work upon. We share the fact that we're peripheral within the United Kingdom, that sense of the north, that sense of being on the edge, that sense of London not really caring about anything that happens north of Watford.
Like in Scotland, there are not many Conservative MPs in the North East and Cumbria. At the moment, there are just four. But Teesside's only Conservative MP, James Wharton, says it's too simplistic an argument to make that London ignores our region and Scotland just because we're a long way away.
If you go to Cornwall, they would hear exactly the same complaint, that they feel that Westminster's a long way away and doesn't always understand their needs in their area. That actually comes down to local politicians. The job of MPs like me is to go to Westminster and represent places like Stockton South, which I represent in Parliament. Yes, it's true, there is that feeling that we're that bit further away, that we're not right next to or in the capital. And that is true in Scotland as well, but I don't think it is necessarily unique to the North East or the North of England and to Scotland, because it's true of many other places too.
If we leave the politics to one side for the moment and look at the economics, there are many similarities between Scotland and the North East. We were once both world leaders in the heavy industries such as coal mining, steel making and shipbuilding. That age has passed, but the fabric of our local communities has in many ways remained the same.
I think the North East and particularly the West of Scotland are very, very similar places. And it's funny because when I came to Middlesbrough 14 years ago, I realised it was just like the Glasgow that I grew up in.
Alistair Thompson, the Dean of the Business School at Teesside University, says yes, we share a common industrial heritage, but we've still got many similar traits in an economic sense as well.
The industries may be slightly different, so we've restarted steelmaking recently in Teesside. There's no steelmaking in Scotland anymore. But then if you look at things like oil and gas and offshore, for example, they're both very strong components of the Scottish economy, but they're equally very strong components of, particularly in Tyneside and Teesside, trying to make sure that the North Sea oil fields are serviced by whatever sources of supply that they might need to get the oil out of the ground.
Add to that mix agriculture and a thriving tourist industry in Cumbria, and you can see how our region, economically and politically, mirrors Scotland. But let us not forget that whilst being similar to our neighbours, they are in fact better off than we are. Unemployment levels here in the North East and Cumbria are the highest in the UK at above 9%. In Scotland, unemployment is just below 7%. And since 2006, households in Scotland have got richer, according to the Office for National Statistics, whilst people in our region have got poorer. But whatever the outcome in September, Alistair Thompson says having Scotland next door to us creates opportunities.
It's got to be in our best interest in the North East to have our neighbours economically successful, because they then can become clients for the sorts of goods and services that we can provide here in the North East. But having a major customer just across the border who's also doing well and who's also taking goods and services from the North East business community isn't necessarily a bad thing either. So I think there is cause for optimism.
We share many things then with our Scottish neighbours, and for many of the fans sat around me here at the Riverside Stadium, they'll share the same economic and political frustrations with Westminster as those campaigning for a yes vote do, and they'll probably share the same frustrations with those campaigning for a no vote as well. It's clear that our heritage is very much linked with Scotland, but now our two futures could be very different indeed. You're listening to Borderlands with David Rhodes for the BBC in the North East and Cumbria. So if Scotland does become an independent country, what might it offer the North East and Cumbria? Well, I've come to the central belt of Scotland to find out.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, conductor speaking. Next and final stop for this service will be Glasgow Queen Street, where the train terminates.
A yes vote, according to the Yes campaign, will create a prosperous, independent Scotland that would become richer. That wealth would then flow over the border, creating jobs and new opportunities in the north of England. But supposedly, we'd benefit in other ways as well.
UK's current plans for high-speed rail for Scotland and for the north, well, they certainly lack high ambition, and they also lack speed. They may not reach Manchester till 2032.
By train, it's taken me 2.5 hours to get here from Newcastle, and later it'll take me about an hour and 15 minutes to reach Carlisle. Alex Salmond knows there are many people in Cumbria and the North East who are resentful about the UK government's current high-speed rail plans.
There is an assumption that high-speed rail has to start in the south and gradually, very, very gradually, ease its way north. But the first railway line to Carlisle didn't come from London, it came from Newcastle. Rather than paying our portion of the borrowing costs for high-speed rail as we wait for decades for it to spread up from the south, we can use that money to build high-speed rail from the north instead.
The ambition for Yes campaigners is for an independent Scotland to build high-speed rail links down the west coast of Carlisle and in the east create a high-speed rail triangle connecting Glasgow, Edinburgh and Newcastle. Stephen Noon is the chief strategist for the Yes campaign.
Having the ability to travel from Newcastle to Glasgow in, say, 45 minutes, that would just transform how we consider the two cities. You know, business links would become much easier. We'd essentially become part of the same economic area, a much more powerful economic area, able to provide some sort of counterbalance to the London and the South East, which is the dominant economic area in the UK at the moment.
A cross-border railway connecting the north of England to Scotland, potentially, according to the Yes campaign, could benefit 8 million people. HS2 isn't physically coming to our region at the moment, but neither will a high-speed rail line from Scotland, according to David Whitten from the Better Together campaign.
Frankly, as we get closer to September the 18th, the Yes campaign will tell you anything. Where's the money going to come from to build that high-speed rail link? I mean, I think the best way for the people of the North East and the people of Scotland to get high-speed rail is to actually vote for a different party in the 2015 election. At the end of the day, it has been a successful marriage of nations, probably the most successful marriage of countries that the world has ever seen. There is no good reason to break it up.
Back in Carlisle, and the offer made by Scotland will seem appealing to some. Whether it's improving the rail links or adding extra lanes to the A69 or the A1 around Newcastle, those decisions for Cumbria and the North East at the moment can only be made in Westminster. George Beveridge is the chair of the Cumbrian Local Enterprise Partnership, a group tasked with improving Cumbria's economic fortunes.
Cumbria is a large geographical area, but we've got a relatively small population, 500,000 or so. So we're much smaller than a Greater Manchester or a Liverpool City region, and therefore we find it hard to score against criteria for investment in, say, rail and roads and so on.
But would an economically prosperous and potentially richer independent Scotland really benefit people here in Cumbria more widely? Rob Johnston from the Cumbrian Chamber of Commerce has an interest in what the Yes campaign are proposing.
It's easy to say we're going to do something like build a high-speed rail line. It would be interesting to see how it was funded, because if Scotland can produce that sort of investment and make it happen, then there may be something really, really exciting in this.
But like many in these parts, he remains unconvinced about how Cumbria would directly benefit from having an independent and potentially prosperous Scotland on its doorstep.
One of the questions I put to Alex Salmond when he had his visit to Carlisle was, we've heard this before, we had it previously in the northwest where, and we know how successful Manchester has been, and it's difficult to see how that economic impact in that area gets further north than Preston. How are we to believe that even if there was a fantastic sort of growth in the Scottish economy focused around the central belt, how is that going to flow out and affect southwest Scotland, let alone Cumbria?
I mean, this is one of the great myths. Scotland is one of the top 20 wealthiest countries in the world, and that's the Financial Times that says it. Per head, we're actually richer than the UK, than France, and even Japan. So Scotland has got a lot of wealth. The problem is how that wealth is shared. So Scotland has got wealth enough to do all these things if we actually take responsibility for our wealth, take control over our resources.
That's Stephen Noon again. As you've heard, people in Cumbria and the North East are not dismissive in general about potentially what an independent Scotland could do for the region. Some people can see benefits, others can see potential negatives. They all, though, want more proof, something a bit more tangible. But when it comes to proving the claims of either side in this debate, it is more often than not almost impossible to do so. You're listening to Borderlands with David Rhodes for the BBC in the northeastern Cumbria. Before you ask, no, we're not back in Scotland. We're actually in Durham, at the Durham Miners' Gala. The Pipers are in fact from Northumberland, proof again of the cultural bonds that exist between our region and Scotland. The gala, or the gala, depending on how you want to say it, attracts thousands of people each year to Durham to celebrate the region's socialist and trade union history.
If Scotland secedes, I think the northeast of England will suffer greatly, because I believe Scotland's got more of a socialist ideal.
Dave Hopper is the General Secretary of the Durham Miners' Union.
If they don't keep in the union, I don't think we'll ever see a Labour Party elected again at Westminster. We must, wherever possible, try and call upon our colleagues in Scotland to steer with it. I would be actually advocating, if Scotland leave, that we bring the border down to the Humber side, somewhere like Humber, and all of the people in the north throw the lot in with Scotland, because we'd be left with Tory government after Tory government when we didn't have vote Tory.
And Dave raises an interesting point. What does happen to us after September the 18th? An independent Scotland would be in control of its own destiny. We'd all of a sudden become the furthest region away from London. But even if the union is maintained, we know that Scotland will get more devolved power, potentially further widening the economic and social divides between us and our near neighbours. So do we need our own form of devolution then? Christine Graham, an MSP for the Scottish Nationalist Party in the Borders, thinks so.
Of course I want to see the north of England thriving. And I know why the north of England people are frightened in some respects of independence, because they think with independence we will encourage growth in businesses and suck it away from the north of England. The answer for the north of England is do the same as Scotland. You can't go for independence, you're not a nation, but for goodness sake, you set up a strong regional assembly and start making sure you have your clout and you draw it away from the overheated south.
No, I'm totally against regional government. There'll be one played off against another. The northeast of England's been the poor boy of all the areas, you know. We'd be competing against Wales, we'd be competing against Scotland. Those who work the longest hours for the least pay and in a fight for wages and conditions will get all the orders. The rest, who maybe want to stand up and be counted, will be starved into submission. Regionalism is no good.
A difference of opinions already, and this is not a new argument, especially here in the northeast. 10 years ago, the people of this region rejected overwhelmingly the idea of having its own regional assembly in a referendum. John Tominey led the campaign for devolution in the northeast.
I think, in a sense, many of the issues which the referendum on a northeast assembly was intended to address are still here. It's still a region with social and economic conditions which are well below the national average, and actually in many ways the gap's widening. It's a region which needs governance, if you like, at the regional scale. There are all kinds of issues, economic development, transport, housing, which can't be managed solely by local authorities and need to be managed at a higher geographical scale. 10 years on, we're no further forward in terms of tackling these key issues, and in some, I would argue, some key respects, we've probably taken steps backward.
In 2004, 78% of those who voted against the idea of a regional assembly.
The referendum was a kind of canary in the cage. Part of the reason for its rejection was the fact that we were at the beginning of a mood of anti-politics, which I think has taken grip particularly in England. One of the most compelling arguments which was made against a regional assembly, even though it was untrue, was that it was going to produce more politicians. And I think that we caught the first ripples of the waves of anti-politics which have grown since then.
Like in other parts of the UK, we now have organisations such as local enterprise partnerships designed to boost the regional economy, and in the North East we have the beginnings of a combined authority, bringing together 7 local councils.
Clearly it's 10 years since the regional referendum in the North East delivered a strong no vote to regional devolution. We can't get away from that.
The chair of the fledgling combined authority is Simon Hennig, the leader of Durham County Council.
To put my cards on the table, you know, I was somebody who supported a regional assembly 10 years ago, and the reason for that is I think it would have allowed us to present a stronger case. I still don't think this is an issue which is being talked about in the streets and on the doorsteps. It is being talked about, however, a bit more by some of the decision makers at the moment. So it's slowly coming back onto the table, But I personally believe we have to show the current structures, such as the Combined Authority and LEP, are working effectively before we move on to that next step. It's too soon still, even though it's 10 years, to present that question again. I personally think if you did, that you'd receive the same answer.
I believe there's still a powerful case for regional government. I think the case, in many ways, in intellectual terms, is more compelling than it's ever been. We're out of step with the rest of the world, in the sense that most countries around the world, not just in Europe but around the world, are pursuing this path of devolution, and I think it looks rather odd that England remains this highly centralised structure. So I think the intellectual case is strong, but I think the political will is what's missing, and it's not clear to me where that will come from.
That's John Tominey again. The debate in the North East about regional devolution will continue, but what about Cumbria? Where does it see its future? George Beveridge is the chair of the Cumbrian Local Enterprise Partnership.
I wouldn't be looking to, for example, support another tier of, say, regional government. I don't think there's any appetite from the public or business for another level of politicians.
So like in the North East, there appears to be at the moment no overwhelming clamour for regional devolution in Cumbria as well. And as George points out, if it did happen, Cumbria is a county torn in two directions.
In the northern part of Cumbria, there's probably a stronger affinity with the northeast. In the southern parts of Cumbria, there's probably more of an affinity with the northwest. So that if regional government was in prospect, if that did come along, I think there'd have to be a very sort of careful consultation and deliberation on exactly where Cumbria would sit.
It would appear that people in the northeast and Cumbria are still aware of the debate surrounding the pros and cons of having our own form of regional devolution. But as we've heard, most seem convinced that whilst the idea on paper seems attractive, there is, at the moment, very little appetite practically to go back down that road again. Christine Graham from the SNP, though, believes in the event of a yes vote in September, people in the northeast and Cumbria would think again.
Scotland's liberation will be the liberation of the north of England. I have no doubts about that whatsoever. When independence comes to Scotland and the north of England sees what Scotland can do, given its power back, I am sure that North of England will take this opportunity to have its own, let's say, regional assembly as an economic powerhouse.
We started this programme by asking if the creation of an independent Scotland would mean the North East and Cumbria would become a borderlands, an area of uncertainty between two separate countries. But haven't we already got two separate countries?
Absolutely. I mean, Scotland competes as a nation in our own right. So Scotland is a country. We're a country that voluntarily entered a relationship with England 300 years ago. We're now actually just looking for a new relationship, a different sort of partnership for the 21st century.
Stephen Noon is the chief strategist for the Yes campaign. As we know, there are already significant differences between England and Scotland, but according to James Wharton, the Conservative MP for Stockton South, that's what makes the United Kingdom, in his opinion, so special.
There are differences between Teesside and Tyneside. There are differences between Yorkshire and Lancashire. There's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it's one of the things that makes this such a great country. It's that internal diversity. I really do think we're better together.
From Darlington to Barrow, from Sunderland to Penrith, does in fact then a borderlands already exist? First, George Beveridge from the Cumbria Local Enterprise Partnership, and then Alistair Thompson from Teesside University.
Yes, I think it does. I think there's sufficient differences between the systems in Scotland, the institutions in Scotland and how they operate, and England. My view is there's a borderland here now. It's going to develop whatever happens on the 18th of September. In Cumbria, we need to be ready to engage with that debate, whatever the Scottish people decide to do.
There's a very long established different way of doing just about everything in Scotland and the way things are done in England. Yes, we're already the bit that comes up against the different system, the bit that is the borderlands, if you like, but you can kind of look at that as a negative or you can look at it as a positive. I think on balance there's more opportunity in it than downside.
The people of Scotland on September the 18th will make their decision about the future of their country. The repercussions of that vote, whatever the outcome, will be felt here in the northeastern Cumbria. But whatever happens, our relationship with Scotland is changing. So welcome to the Borderlands.